Hi. Just before I start, I'll smooth that a bit. I also brought some rosemary and stuff. Like, I'm a pacifist. I'm not big on war, but I just want to acknowledge all the beautiful boys and beautiful girls that we don't have because of war. And pray for peace. First of all, I'm just going to get Luke to be my scribe, if you would. I'd just like you to give me a few ideas about what you think creativity is. Okay, is that better? It's just kind of, I might need to move this a bit so I can read it, yeah. So have you got any ideas? Can you give me some ideas on what you think creativity is, Jeremy? Okay, so you put a few things together and you find something else out of that. What else? What do other people think creativity is? Yes? Imagine it and make it so.
Hard,
yeah. Seeing beyond what is.
Something that flows out of something that's within.
So it's within and it.
Feed into the within and then the within sort of flows out.
That's right. And some people say that song just wrote itself or that book just wrote itself. I mean, it very rarely does, but sometimes creativity just comes from somewhere and you don't know where to.
Just before Easter, Ross Lansky showed a series of pixelated pictures up there on the wall. He went through a series of about six, and after the fourth one, I could see Jesus' face on it. My right brain saw that. Everybody said, blah, blah, blah. But I saw Jesus' face in anguish in that. I did a watercolour painting from that. It was later, proved I was wrong. And it was Jesus coming down through an archway. But that's what my creativity saw in that, in that pixelated mess.
And you took that to make something beautiful. Yeah.
So is that about perception? Really? Like everyone has a different perception of something, but
obviously, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, someone up the back there was saying something.
It's corny, but inspiration plus perspiration.
Inspiration plus 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration up the back. Yeah.
Innovative and creative ideas for human desire and outcome.
Yeah, so sometimes getting that come out of it.
Yes?
Sorry?
I was going to say, I was actually thinking what Lee was saying, but also there's some element of the skill or talent
yeah.
that we bring to,
yep.
to that inspiration.
The grind. Yep, so maybe the mastery of something that leads you to be able to be creative once you... Yep.
Something that's produced without any effort whatsoever through self.
Through excitement.
With no effort.
No effort, yeah. And that's sometimes true too. Sometimes you can work very hard and sometimes it's yeah. just there.
What you chucked in there also about Christian work ethic stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. It does. It sometimes just comes from nowhere.
Yeah.
Yes?
Sometimes you get creative when you try everything else and it doesn't work.
Yes.
So then you have to...
In spite of yourself. Peter. Yeah, so the hands of the living God are our hands. What about you, Jim?
If I said to it's into one word, it's to explore.
It's to explore, yes?
I think there's a lot inside today, so just the fundamental drive behind you.
Sorry, can you say it again?
Fundamental drive behind you.
Yes, it's a drive there that we've all got, and sometimes we lose it too. Anybody got anything else we need to say about creativity? Tony?
A dream.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how many inventors have you heard of that dreamt something and then woke up and made something amazing?
From a science perspective, it's drawing order out of chaos.
Order out of chaos.
It's heartfelt.
It's heartfelt, yeah. Anything else that people want to say? Okay, well, we'll leave that as kind of a whole bunch of stuff which talks a bit about it. Now, there's lots of theorists on creativity, and I'm not going to talk about any of them, so I'm sorry if I'm not going to talk about three hats or any of that kind of stuff, but a lot of people are familiar with that, they've read that kind of stuff. This is actually something I wrote a long time ago, but when in my 30s, when I was very, very creative and did art all the time, and I'm looking back on it kind of 20 years later. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I think sometimes you have these thoughts, and that's what I like about diaries and things you write. You go back to it and think, oh, that's what I was thinking then. I've got a whole different perspective on it now. Although some of the things are still the same. Carl Jung has a book called Memories, Dreams and Reflections, and he reflects while looking out at the Athi Plains in Nairobi, and he tells us only by him giving the world objective existence did it come into being. So it wasn't there until he gave it objective existence. In a sense, essence, we are the co-creators of the world because we give it meaning. This for me seems to link how I see God, how I experience God, and how I experience God as an art maker. I've always made art, not so much at the moment. I'm a bit stuck, but I'm still creative. And I studied art therapy in my 30s, and why I did that was because I used to work for a long time in welfare, and I used to spend a lot of time finding people houses and finding kids' schools and finding money for people and delivering bread to people's houses and getting attacked by marauding dogs. And I kept doing that and doing that, and that was very valuable to me, and I thought that was my role, and for a couple of years I lived with homeless people. And then I kind of thought, I want to help people that are struggling to work with their life using art. And that's how I was using it, to struggle with my life. So I went to study art therapy. But before that point, I actually went to the Centre of Action and Contemplation in New Mexico, where Richard Rohr is. And I've said this story many times, but my mentor was actually an artist. So I hung out with this woman whose husband had built her this beautiful studio. If you've ever been to the Centre of Action Contemplation, it's in a really dodgy part of New Mexico. I mean, Albuquerque. It's not in the flash bit of, you know, with all the adobe. I mean, it has got adobe, but not the same way that the flash areas look. And so she's got this lovely studio in the midst of this quite interesting place. Like, Luke and I went there, and one night we heard gunshots, and it was just people celebrating. You know, when you're Mexican, sometimes. And so we were there, and we were kind of going to ourselves. Well, I was there when I was... Luke went the second time, I went the first time. And she was kind of amazing the way she just kind of... She'd got to 50, 55, and had her kids, and most of them were grown up. She'd had five kids. And she's a very good artist, and she went back to her art. So she was an inspiration for me, for someone who can maybe not have time for art for a very long time, and then get back to her. And she was friends with a guy called Robert Lentz, and he was an icon maker. And Robert used to do all these fantastic icons, but before that he used to do very orthodox icons, because he was an orthodox monk. And at a certain point in his life he just went, this isn't what I want to do anymore, and he actually bought back all his icons from people. He left being a monk, and he started to paint icons of all the people in social justice. So people like Steve Biko, Oscar Romero, some of the Native American, the saints, of, and people who were some very inspirational people, because the sense of an icon is to invoke the spirit of that person in your home. And he was also very close to Mexicans, who actually don't think people are dead in the same way we do. Like when they talk about Oscar Romero, and I don't know if you know about Oscar Romero, but he was a great bishop in South America, and he actually died defending the poor and was shot down by the government of the day. And whenever you mentioned Oscar Romero's name in Mexico, everybody would go presente, because to them he was present, he wasn't gone. And he said, I will rise again in the spirit of my people. And the thing about these icons that taught me was that this guy had spent all his life in soup kitchens, working very hard with the homeless, doing all this stuff. And actually where he needed to be was painting icons, you know. And that goes against everything I'd been taught. I'd been taught you have to get out there, do everything, help everybody. And he still did help people, he still did do some of that work, but these icons were reaching thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And so for me, that was really kind of useful, you know, to see that you could be an art maker and still be promoting social justice. And for me, a lot of the work that people have done in a creative way actually inspires me as a Christian and as a person who believes in social action, who believes in social change. I don't know if you guys have any people like that. Do you have any people that creatively, maybe musicians, artists, poets, that inspire you? Can you think of any people that, or living or dead, that sometimes you use to kind of inspire you in your faith or your work? Sorry? Yeah? So Michael, he tends to be fairly popular in this church. And again, a man who struggled with depression, a man who struggled with his life a lot of the time, as well as making this luminous, luminous art and poetry. Who else? Can anybody think of any other people?
Henry Nouwen.
Yeah, he was one for me too. What was it about Henry for you?
Oh, it's the nature of his writing that speaks from and to the head and heart.
Yeah.
And so, his own vulnerable way, his own life journey.
Yeah.
Is revealed to his writing.
Yeah. So, and it speaks to you.
It speaks to me.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Paul and his music.
Yeah. Paul and his music. So we've got that, and we're very lucky to have that. What about other people? Any other?
Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Hate cannot drive out hate, only love
can do that. Yeah. He was quite an amazing orator and writer of speeches, and those speeches have continued to resonate for people.
I think artwork on fridges made by kids at pre-primary. Yeah. I think people before they learn that they're not incredibly creative.
Yep. Yep.
Some of the graffiti done by Banksy.
Yeah. And when you go, we were in Bristol, and it was all over Bristol. And to me, Bristol is made alive by the community art that's all over it. You know, and that makes me happy. Every time I see a piece of community art, every time I see a bit of yarn bombing around a tree, I think, oh, someone creative is in my suburb. Thank God. Because you begin to wonder if you're the only one kind of thinking that way. Anybody else? Yes?
Bruce Coburn.
Yeah.
Yes. He's an icon.
Yes. And he is for a lot of people too. Yeah, and it keeps a number of other people inspired and going. Me? You think some? I'm creatively inspiring to him, which is good. And I think all mums are that to their children. Anybody else? So, that's kind of for me what I'm thinking in terms of the hands of the living God. The God that keeps creating through our hands. And I also realise that it's part of my prayers, it's how I understand my dreams, it's how I make concrete that which is symbolic. And often for us, we don't know something until we see it in someone else's symbology, someone else's music, someone else's art, someone else's photography. And the way I saw art therapy when I was working in it, different to other forms of therapy, is that people can find things in front of them. Like when you're doing talking therapy sometimes, particularly if you're stressed or frightened, sometimes you can't remember what you're talking about, but when you draw it, you can actually look at it. Or when you make it in a piece of clay or a piece of sculpture, you can actually look at it and go, that, and you can actually look at a number of sessions that you've done with people and see the results in front of you. It's quite interesting. And the shape of things, not just some object or symbol. Sometimes it's the shape of stuff or the texture of it or the sound of it or the size of it. It's something beyond words that just clicks deep to us. We just look at it and we go, ah, that's resonating with me. And it's kind of that silent knowing you have when you are kind of working with a piece of art or a piece of music or a piece of poetry. Something in you just resonates like a little harp. And when I'm talking personally. This isn't a discourse, this isn't a kind of technical way of talking about creativity. I'm talking partially from my heart. And a long time, for a lot of times what I did was I made pictures and I put them in my room so I could see them before I slept and before I woke again. And I always tell people when they're making stuff, put it somewhere where you're looking at it a lot, because they become like little icons for you and the spirit, which is part of their inception. And I have had, over the years, one of my things that I do is I always make little collages of what I need in my life, or what I want to be inspired by in my own life, or what I want to make in my life. And for some people they write poems, some people write songs, whatever is doing it for you. But I need to look at them, and what was really amazing was nearly inevitably those things came to pass. Be careful what you wish for. And also, people think, oh, I'll just do this, I'll just put it all up and all my dreams will come true. Well, it might take 10 years, it might take 15 years, it might take 20 years, it might take your whole life for the thing to happen. It doesn't happen overnight, but it will happen. And I think just the power of symbols to kind of get your brain to click in unconscious ways towards what is your longing is really interesting. And I always say to people, if you're stuck, and that's what I'm doing at the moment, I'm just making collages. And I look at them and I can see things and I know when it's time to change. I know when they're finished and it's time to make another one. And also, if you look over them over 10 years, you just get amazed by it. And this happens without there being words involved a lot of the time. I think most people would be familiar with the choosing of objects and symbols to remind them of their relationships, and that's a very strong part of the Christian tradition. And who's been to a beautiful cathedral anywhere in the world? What happens when you go into that space? What's telling you this is a sacred space or a God space?
Sometimes it's the manufactured architecture, and the design makes feel that way.
These don't realise huge ceilings going up into space, or a rose window, or what other things do you see in church? Sorry.
In that space, it's your own sound disappears.
Yeah. And sometimes you go into some of them, there's a little hole where the light is going through and going right down to the ground at a certain time of the day. If you've been to the Pantheon or somewhere like that, you just see this tiny little thing of light. Anything else that kind of marks the sacred?
That's an interesting point, actually, because they're not giving you the blessing, but there are huge Gothic halls which actually weren't built as churches.
Yep.
Churches.
Yep.
Westminster and Great Hall where there were tiles.
Yeah. So there's something different about a God space to another form of architecture. For
I almost don't like myself as saying, but I think there is a difference. There's an ambience,
but
I agree with the ambience, yes. The general ambience. I've studied people's history, I guess, the past, the arch infinitum,
yeah. And for a lot of people, because the churches were built to say, we rule this place, we rock, and, you know, behave. Yeah, sorry.
It's also that sense of history and shared community.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an ongoing tradition that keeps going. So you can, sorry, yeah?
Yeah, often there's little human things like memorial signs.
Yes.
And another thing
Yes.
Often find you going very crazy and you smell incense, burnt incense, myrrh, or just other things that are fine.
I remember going to St. Paul's and they were singing, you know, and just the singing is part of it too.
Yeah. There was a little chapel in the Israel, in the hospital we used to go to, and there's a couple of stained glass windows, Mark Chagall stained glass windows. They were less than a metre wide room, but they, every time you looked at them, the symbolism really spoke my heart.
And there's something about a stained glass window, because I went to Rance, same thing, and there was a beautiful stained glass window of Jesus in various courses. And there's one where Jesus is on the cross. The light shines through his face at a certain time of the day, and it's like this compassion and this love. I was just sitting there. We were sitting there for about an hour, just this beautiful face looking at you and loving you in a way that sometimes you can't feel in different contexts. Was this...
The texture of the air... We get the senses, but just the texture of the air somehow.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And for different people, that'd be different. And there'll be people who go into that kind of space and feel those symbols as oppressive also, because of what they've been made to do and the context, you know. And you only have to see a Tudor rose around the place, and I'm thinking of Henry VIII and all that story, you know. You can go either way with symbols. And I think that the people that keep making those things in whatever context they do makes it even more important that creativity is part of this process. And I always hear people saying, I can't make art. This stuff is all right if you're an artist, but unfortunately, I don't have that trick. I don't have that thing going for me. And that is inevitable. When I worked as an art therapist, if I'd had $10 for every time someone said that to me, I would have been very rich. And it's because all of us, you know, I mean, it's like Jim this year at school. The first term, the teacher said, oh, we haven't been able to get to the art room, so we haven't done any art this term. You know, and unfortunately, if you get a teacher who doesn't like art, or you get someone who maybe thinks it should be perfect and your tree's not the right colour, you know, like that flowers are red, red song, and green trees are green, you know, the teacher telling the kid, you know, your painting's not right. It's not true. You know, but sometimes people take that small thing, or for me, you know, being scared of the recorder for the whole of year five and no one noticing that I hadn't actually brought my recorder for a whole year, that I'd said the whole year, I forgot it again. And I love music, but when I was in grade five, I was scared of it. So the little experiences you have make it hard for you then to take up those things as an older person. And I'm not saying you can't have creativity in other ways as well. And I see it equally in sport. A good mark, you know, in footy is a beautiful creative thing. So I'm not saying it's just got to be the clever little things with the certain people who can only do it. It's in all areas of life. And, you know, certainly if you know maths and you know how beautiful maths can be, or how beautiful science can be when you start looking at things through a microscope, or looking at pure mathematics, you can see that creativity there. And, you know, if you read Einstein, half the things he figured out when he was just doing something else. But what I can say about creativity is that I encourage people to find stuff, even if it's cutting out bits of paper and sticking them on something, or get out the paper and scissors and just be like Matisse, just rip up bits of paper and put them together. Or if you're scared of recorders like I were, find another instrument. And I love recorders now, so it changes. But I think it's true. When you look at little kids, they do it instinctively. If you put some stuff out, they will just go, oh, I'm going to start doing this. Whereas if you put it out with adults, they go like this. And there was a time, one of the art therapists I used to work under, he used to call it milk white panic, that people saw a piece of paper and went, ah! And it doesn't have to be that way either. But the making of an image is not necessarily about making an aesthetic object. And one of the things that's really important about creativity is that it's the process, not the product. We're all hung up on products. We all want to say, oh, look, here's the picture in the gallery, here's the song. But a lot of it is just process. And for some people, just sitting there going, playing a couple of chords or just going through one line or just listening to the rhythm of something is okay in itself. Or just, you know, we used to have this exercise where we used to put a chalk on the end of a piece of bamboo and just get people with a big piece of paper on the ground just going like this in big wide arcs of your arm and using your body just to make a mark. And that's not going in a gallery, it's just, you know, just feeling the beauty of a mark or feeling the beauty of a sound or singing and listening to the harmonics of it. And I'm not about painting the right way or doing things the right way, because there's a lot of people who will tell you the right way. I'm not one of them. I love a perfect thing and I'll sit forever looking at Matisse's, but not everybody has to be Matisse or has to be Tchaikovsky or has to be whoever. They can be who they are, and they are the hands of the living God doing what they're doing. And I think you've got to offer yourself the luxury of another language, and I think go through your dreams and your meditations, make them, ritualise them, leave them around the place and see what resonates in your heart in other places. Art is also a very good way of focusing, and when I talked about that chalk at the end of the stick, you can breathe in, breathe out, and you're doing meditation, you're doing contemplation. And there's a lot of research now on wind instruments and the fact that they're very helpful for traumatised kids, because you're blowing out and you're breathing in and you're blowing out long notes. So there you go, you didn't even know you had stuff that was therapeutic that you were doing. And I'm very interested in that whole kind of way of looking at things. And if you close your eyes and you make rhythmical patterns in the sand, and who hasn't gone down to the beach and just made a little circle in the sand or just felt it and made little ridges in it? Or they can make it in clay and they go to a different space. And some people chip away at stone or wood. I knew pet carvers that hardly knew what they were doing. Hopefully enough not to cut their fingers off. But they'd just be sitting there chip, 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 and it was the process, it was the carving, not what they were making. And particularly, has anybody seen Chinese calligraphers? It's the craft, it's not what's at the end. They will sometimes do hundreds, thousands, probably millions by the end of their life, little ink marks, and it's the process. And if you've ever been taught by a calligrapher, it is so hard, because they are doing it as a meditation and a craft. We are taught to do it so we can see what happens at the end. And you're sitting there going, I've got to get half the ink on the brush, half the water on the brush, make a mark, make it look like a piece of bamboo, you know? Whereas they're just going, I'm following this and I'm looking at it. A lot of calligraphers, before they even draw something, they will look at it. So they have the sense of the object they're drawing before they even start drawing it. And then they might do it a million times before they get to just the mark that they can keep making. So I think it's worthwhile doing stuff just for the process of doing it. And you can make marks over and over again and journey to different levels, levels that you didn't even know were there. And there's also something about a new beautiful piece of paper, wood, clay, chalk, paint, a lovely colour, a beautiful piece of paper, a nice, beautiful, luscious word. If you're writers, a luscious word is a delicious thing. And if you're a musician, that one note, that third, that fifth, that whatever, that just, it just makes you happy. And so you can just go into that space with those things and that still point. And I don't know if you remember T.S. Eliot, the still point. And there's only the dance. But in the middle of the dance, there is the still point. And that's the mystery of creativity, that there's something moving, but there's something still at the same time. The process is important, and there doesn't even need to be a product. And I know I'll be radical when I say that, but I'm a believer in process. I've given the impression that the image made must be pictorial or representational, but as you know, if anybody's seen a Rothko, or seen the Rothko Chapel, or seen the one that came to Perth, it was just glowing pieces of red. And I've seen the power of that, just that, not necessarily anything that you can see or make into a symbol sometimes. And God's created the world in so many ways, Such is the power of the arts in creating endless new insights in our life. And I've only chose dance, but, you know, I could talk about music, drama I haven't talked about, you know, and the power of drama to change lives is extraordinary. And also dance, I haven't talked a lot about dance, but for those of you who've done dance, you know, in your body, in very being, in movement, is a process. And I think also art making or creativity can bring light to a problem or an illness or to meditation for ordinary lives. I've seen Aboriginal kids make the symbol for the land rights flag over and over again. And some of them couldn't even tell me what that was about, but they knew for them that was a strong, beautiful symbol and it meant something to them. And it meant something to them when they saw it on Cathy Freeman. And again, it's a symbol. And some of them, they knew it was their symbol and they knew it defined their space in the classroom they were in. And it gave them power and it was their totem, their colours, their dreaming. I also used to work with people and I used to get them to do their dreams if they'd had a bad dream and make themselves whatever was in the dream and write another ending for it. So kids would make up other endings for things. So they would if they were frightened of tigers, they'd put the tiger in a cage or give the tiger so many snacks that it wasn't hungry and use their creativity so that they could make another meaning out of the dream. I think also push all criticisms of yourself as an artist aside. I think you need to know the need to make concrete a feeling or a symbol or idea. And find a medium which speaks to you and begin to make art, because God will be in your hands co-creating the earth. And I think the way the world is at the moment, we need as many people as possible co-creating the earth. And I look at the environmental people and the creativity and response. You know, when I'm not feeling fabulous about the future of the world, I look at young people and all their different ways of making responses to the world and the creativity in the writing and the posters and the ideas for how to recycle things, and I think I'm really glad that's out there. I just think try it and see what happens. And I think a lot of you may be working towards a better world by peopling the soup kitchens and the demonstrations, and I think that's important. I think that's a positive energy for peace and justice in our time, but people need bread as well as roses. I think I don't know if people remember the AIDS quilts, the HIV quilts that people made when people died, the memorial quilts, and they covered entire blocks of land at the time in the 90s. And that was so healing for the families who had lost people. Art does make a difference, both for yourself and the people you are with. There's a lot more I could say, and I feel like I could set it better. Perhaps I should have drawn you a picture or sung you a song rather than talking about this. Do people know the Indigo Girls? They have a song called Hammer and Nail, and they say it's about learning to use your hands as well as your head, and I think that's important too. And it tells me to get out there and make something, even though at the moment I'm a bit stuck. So I hope your hands will go forth, those hands of the living God. Go out and create. Let them loose to tell you new stories and old wisdoms. Let them mourn and contemplate. Let them go forth. Let them go. Thank you. I'm sorry.